Okay, good. Have a little trouble with password here. Okay, let's see. All right, so while I try to get my password going here, we are live on Restream, so please bear with me. I'm having a little, here we go. I'm sure anybody who knows computers knows. Yeah.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
And I'm not great with passwords. I have them all over the place. So let's see. All right, so they want me to create a new password. No problem. Okay, here we go. Okay, so thank you for joining me, everyone. Charles Moskowitz live at YouTube, Monday through Friday, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. Welcome to the program. Dr. Juliet M. Engel is back with us. I think I had you on, Juliet, about a year ago. You're the author of Angels Over Moscow. The Unexpected Life of an American Physician in Russia. I think that before we talk about the very important subject of your book, I want you to talk a little bit about your background and how you, you know, what happened with you in the past, if you don't mind.
Well, actually, when we interviewed before, it was about my book from 2020, which is Sparky, Surviving Sex Magic, which was about my life in an MKUltra program.
Yes.
And that actually
came... A little background on that.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Please, continue. I wanted just to bring us up to speed, talk a little bit about that before we go into the newest book.
Well, I was gonna say how the two are related, because Angels Over Moscow, Sparky was a memoir of my childhood. Angels Over Moscow starts when I first go to Russia in 1990 when I was 40.
Yes.
And then proceeded to develop all kinds of programs and an underground railroad, which rescued thousands of Russian and Soviet women and children and saved them from sex trafficking.
Correct.
But Sparky came after Angels Over Moscow because I was doing all this in Russia and people kept asking me, why are you doing this? And to answer that question, I had to come back and research and write Sparky. So today we're going to talk about angels, but you know, I welcome people to go back and see your podcast and YouTube from a year ago,
right?
Which talks about Sparky.
Okay, so yeah, just to recap, then you were, as a child, you were involved with the MKUltra program, which was partially revealed due to church committee hearings in the late 1970s that the CIA under the MKUltra had been involved in all kinds of undercover experiments with people, brainwashing, you know, various psychic experiments, and stuff that really, under the guise of science, is very, very troubling and very ghoulish and hard to explain why our government would be involved. I guess that maybe the present comparison might be this function technology that resulted in the coronavirus. Why was our government involved in that? It's essentially creating a biological weapon, the force of function. But so you were involved with that as a young person, Juliet, and you were mind manipulated and sex trafficked. And it's just a horrendous story. This is your first book. Then you grow up, you come out of it, you become a physician, and you go to Russia. Talk about what happened with Angels Over Moscow.
Well, I was 40 years old. I was invited to Russia. It was just the first opening of the Iron Curtain, and I was in the first group of physicians that was invited to visit Russia. And it was an amazing experience. I went with the Citizens for Soviet American Dialogue, and it was artists, entertainers, physicians, scientists, writers. It was a phenomenal group, and I was honored to be part of it. And as soon as I got to Moscow, landed in the airport, at Sheremetyevo Airport in Moscow, there was a big pile of luggage, a big pile of passports, and a big pile of visas. And the organizers said, get your luggage, your passport, your visa, and go on through. So there was my luggage, my passport, my visa, and I went on through. And then I realized that nobody else was coming through. Mm. So I had to go through all the way on my own to the end of this sort of like being rebirthed into this bizarre new world. And I got to the other side, and the Russians were all there. It was January, and they're wearing their fur coats, their fur hats with the big ear flaps. They look like grizzly bears. And as soon as I came through, they sort of grabbed me, picked me up, took me over to a table, sat me down, bought me a warm bottle of orange Fanta, which is what they drank, and stared at me because they didn't speak English. I didn't speak Russian, but clearly they wanted to communicate. It turns out that these were the leading doctors of Moscow. They were a ragged looking group because the Russians were extremely poor at that time. They were, mm-hmm. On the verge of starvation, but they really wanted me to come and see their hospitals and not go to the state appointed hospitals, and to really see. My specialty was prenatal diagnosis, prenatal ultrasound. I'd written a lot of papers. I was assistant professor of radiology at the UW, University of Washington. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to come out and see their hospitals. And I didn't know why we had to do this at the airport, why we couldn't do this at the hotel. Although it came clear later, 2 hours later, the rest of the group came through with these very chubby, well-dressed Russians who turned out to be the KGB escorts. And this group of doctors had paid a hefty bribe to airport officials to get me through first. I didn't learn this until much, much later. But it started me on this journey, because as soon as I got out into Russia, I felt like it was all very familiar, which is bizarre when you come from Bellevue, Washington, which is very Tony, mm-hmm. and walk out into the Moscow airport at Sheremetyevo, which is all wet wool, cigar smoke, and dirt, and body odor.
What year was this?
This is 1990. This was right at the beginning.
Right at the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Yes, yes, I was there for that.
Okay.
And so from there,
hospital. Yep, go on, please.
Well, so I witnessed childbirth as it really was in the Soviet Union, which was absolutely horrible. I mean, I'd never seen anything like it. I'd come from a beautiful birthing center in Bellevue, Washington, and to come to this was just a total shock. And it was something I describe it in the book, but it was something I couldn't walk away from. And so I became more and more involved with helping reform childbirth and childbirth education for medical students, and changing the laws and all the things you had to do to improve care for women, plus getting it on Russian television. Men weren't allowed in the birthing centers, and women. And there was this deep-seated Russian superstition that if women talked about childbirth, men would become impotent. Hmm. So men didn't want to hear about it, women didn't want to talk about it, and nobody wanted to see it. And so the men needed to see it, because as soon as we did get it on national television and they did see it, they mm-hmm. made it change. You know, you've got to have men involved. And shall I just keep going?
Please. Yeah. Then go on and discover this, sex trafficking underground in Russia. Talk about
it. Yeah. Well, from the hospitals, I discovered that about a third of the children were being just handed off to orphanages. And this was for various reasons, including red hair. Russia's kids.
And what about the mothers?
Well, lots of times the mothers were extremely poor or single or alcoholic, or there was some kind of social problem. And they would take any excuse to put their children in an institution.
So the mother wanted the babies to be taken away, or were they just told that they were taken away?
It was something that was arranged from the beginning. The medical staff would often encourage mothers to give up their babies.
Were they getting money for that, or just?
Yes, they were getting money for that. And they also encouraged them to have abortions, because they were paid the same amount for an abortion as for a live birth. So of course it was much easier for them.
A public policy can manipulate medical situations. Not to bring up an analogy, but it reminds me of all the cases that were classified as coronavirus death, when in fact we now know that was not true. And the CDC now admits that those numbers were grossly inflated.
I think you'll find the same for the vax, that they're getting paid to give it out.
Well, let's not talk about that. I'll get taken off the air.
Okay, all right.
That's forbidden. That's
forbidden. So they were getting paid. This is the Russian hospitals, Russian doctors, and the children were going off into this Dickinsonian orphanage system. And I did follow the children through the orphanage system, and we did start programs to improve the conditions for children, because they were basically shut it off to the country and then forgotten and left in horrible conditions, grew up just fed into prostitution and organized crime.
Yeah.
And then I discovered the obvious. It hadn't occurred to me till it practically hit me in the face. As I was taking a winter delivery of coats to this orphanage in Karelia up on the border of Finland. Mm-hmm. And all the teenage girls who had been there the summer before were gone. And no one could tell me where they'd gone. None of the staff would. And the kids told me, last summer a bus came from Finland and they took them on a vacation. And they'd never come back. And apparently these kids went on vacation every couple of years, the bus would come. And they knew which girls didn't have family that would check on them or follow them. So these were the real orphan girls. And
girls were then, taken into these orphanages as infants, right at the time they were born.
Well, they went through baby houses, child houses.
I see. And they were sort of, in a sense, groomed by professionals at that time, and brought up without really understanding who they were, their identity, kind of a sort of a quasi form of brainwashing, quite frankly.
Sure. And television didn't help, because television glorified life in the West. The most popular shows were Dallas and something called Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. and other soap operas, which made it just look, all you had to do is get across the border and your life would be
so
wonderful.
They actually set them up that they were given promises that if they went to this camp, and these obviously were young women who were selected because, as you say, they didn't have firm family background. There was nobody really to check on them. Their identity was not, it could eventually be erased without them necessarily knowing that. And then they would go to the summer camp in Karelia, which is on the border, as you say, with Finland, where they would then disappear.
Worse than that, the orphanage was on the border. There were orphanages all over in these remote areas.
Yeah.
The bus would come pick them up and go into Finland and become a mobile brothel. Mm-hmm. So men would come on the bus, rape the children, get off the bus, pay, and the bus would just keep going. And
Did you witness this?
I didn't witness it. I had witnesses tell me this, and so I decided to follow the bus.
Right.
I could, it was 6 months before, but
sure.
It took a regular route, and I figured there had to be other buses, and something was going on here, and the police didn't want to talk about it because they said, it's just prostitutes. What do we care? Well, I cared. I knew these. This was 13 girls.
They were prisoners.
Yes.
Essentially.
They didn't want to be,
So then once they entered into Finland and then they were.
Well, it kept going. They kept going all the way through the north part of lawless track of Sweden. And then into Norway. Yeah. And so I took a bus. I found all this out from women's organizations in northern Russia that I'd started to work with.
Right.
And they wanted to know what was going on too, and they didn't know. But they couldn't cross any of these borders, but I could. So I took a bus from Murmansk way up in northern Russia to Kirkenes way at the top of Norway. It was a 4-hour bus ride. Everyone else in the bus was a Sami person.
Sure.
Yeah. They looked like, yeah, they were all about 4'8". And so I was a foot taller than any of them.
Right.
And they were looking at me like, oh yeah, right.
What are you doing here?
Yeah, really. I think I was the only American that ever took that bus. But okay. I followed the bus, the track of the bus, because there's only one road. And I followed it into Kirkenes, and then I went to the Kirkenes police station. Mm-hmm. And they were so surprised to see me. They weren't guarded at all. So I said, I want to know where these girls are. So the young constable there pulls open a drawer, and it's full of Polaroid headshots. And they're all dead. And he sort of emptied them on the desk, and he said, can you, you know, look for them? And I was just shocked. It was nauseated and
horrifying. Said,
what is going on here?
Were they corrupt, the police in that town, or were they helpful?
Well, until you really point something out to people, a lot of times they don't see it. Sure. And if they don't have to see it, they don't have to do anything about it. So finally, when I talked to more of the police officers, they said, well, certainly if we find someone in need or someone that's trafficked or we can rescue someone, we will help them. They hadn't actually done that with anyone. Mostly they found the dead bodies and they buried them. And that, so there was a mass grave there, and they called them all Natasha. So they didn't know who anybody's name was. They didn't do fingerprints. They didn't do any attempt to really identify them, because there was a big rift between Norway and Russia. You know, there wasn't communication. And part of what I did later was open up communication between law enforcement, between task forces from different countries. And they would be brought into Norway, because Norway goes wild up there on Saturday night. They have all these military bases up there where they're watching Russia. And on Saturday night, all these soldiers come into town and go wild. So I hate to think, you know, I just...
Yeah, it's not nice.
They don't do that anymore, I understand.
Oh, okay. Well, now that it's been a little bit of exposure.
Yes, now that it's been pointed out that, you know, there's kids on these buses. And
now, what happened? I mean, it sounds like that, you know, quite frankly, a lot of these young women probably were murdered or died. In a terrible way, and you know, were raped. Others were basically sent out into this kind of international rat line of sex trafficking. Is that right?
Yes, and we had several cases, and I do cover one case, Angela, who was in Russian, it's Angela, mm-hmm. who was born in the hospital where I was working in 1990. It was trafficked later to Cairo, marched, but she had secreted a cell phone on her. So she started calling me.
Right.
So she called me from Cairo. She called me. They have great cell phone service in the desert between Cairo and Israel, because that's such a common smuggling route. So she was able to call me as they walked across the desert into Israel. And then lost her again, found her again in Albania, mm-hmm. Turkey. And in Turkey, we were able to rescue her, pick her up and bring her back. But like, this will be a spoiler for the book, but it's not easy for them when they come back, because they're coming back from nightclubs. As horrible as they are, they still might consider it better than coming back to their hometowns, you know, where they don't even have toilets. So
right.
It's a hugely complicated problem, and some make it through and some don't.
People have been groomed for this lifestyle, and so they're in it. And, you know, in a way, it's all they've known. And, you know, it's kind of like they're given benefits and rewards, and, you know, it becomes, you know, just what they know. It becomes alluring. And you say that one of the rat lines goes between Egypt and Israel. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh, big one.
Yeah.
But it's not, I only point that out because that was the one I was following. That's where she was. And she was calling from there. There are trafficking routes, and we've mapped them out everywhere. And a lot of these follow traditional smuggling routes. So you have the Bedouins crossing the desert, carrying everything, you know, they smuggle everything. Mm-hmm. And they have since time began. I don't know if you'd call it smuggling. It's the caravans, you know.
Right.
So, of course, they smuggle people, too.
Right.
In Central Asia, you've got the same people that smuggle rugs and smuggle drugs.
The Silk Road. Right.
Well, it's the smuggler's road. It's the smuggler's Silk Road. It probably, yeah, probably follows a lot of the Silk Road.
You know, there were a lot of, like, you know, conspiracy theories, and I'm not here to endorse any of them, but rumors about this recent barge going aground in the Suez Canal, that there were children on that barge in some of those carriers, and that has often been a common venue for smuggling people. Do you know anything about that?
It doesn't surprise me. I don't know specifically about that barge, although I did try to find all the information about that.
And I'm not here to say it was. I mean, I have no idea.
But yes, they've certainly found people smuggled in shipping containers all over the world.
Right.
So to say it wasn't would be naive.
Exactly. Now, how does this all reach the United States, and how serious a problem is it here?
Big. So after I found what had happened to these girls and realized that it wasn't just a local Russian problem, it was an international problem. And I got a grant from United Nations UNIFEM, and it was a violence against women grant. And basically they gave me a little video player, and I bought some tapes called Bought and Sold, which is this wonderful undercover operation by an organization called Global Survivor Network, where they were tracing smugglers, but they ran into human traffickers. So they'd gotten a grant and done undercover investigations of people smuggling and throughout the former Soviet Union. And it was in Russian. So I took the little player and I took the tapes and I went to, there was a team of us, there were six of us. And each one went to different villages and we would present this. It would be the big event of the year, you know, having us roll in with a tape player, plug it into the only electrical socket in town and show the tape bought and sold. And what happened was then, after every time I'd play the tape, there would be utter silence. You just see their brains ticking over, like, oh my God. And then would come the gush that, oh yeah, Natasha disappeared. Oh yeah, Ilyana disappeared. Oh no, you know. Mm-hmm. And they never went to the police because they didn't trust, they were more afraid of the police than they were the traffickers, who right. were always someone local. They knew all these characters.
Traffickers are very scary people. I mean, these are similar to some of the cartels that come out of Central America and, you know, start to come north into American cities. And I mean, a lot of that problem was dealt with vigorously by President Trump. We don't know what's going on now, but there's evidence that they're coming back. I'm not saying they are, but, you know, there's questions. The point I'm making here is that the people that are involved in the smuggling of these young women are very, very dangerous criminals who will do, you know, completely, you know, immoral. They do anything they need to do to further their enterprise.
And laugh about how easy it is.
Yeah, I mean, right. They're very arrogant. So you know, you have local people who will look the other way and not even, you know, the way this kind of thing works anyways, I mean, the way evil works, I just finished a book called The Satanic Conspiracy.
Oh.
Is that when you have things going on that are that evil, it's almost impossible for the average person to comprehend it. So you don't see it. You just, you know, you turn a blind eye, literally. And you don't, it doesn't enter into your consciousness. It's just something that's going on around you. The idea that people could do this kind of thing and could be evil is so inconceivable to average person people that you just don't, you shield yourself. You don't know it. That's how the satanic influence works. It fills that void and it's able to function sometimes right out in the open, and people don't even see it. So we have this issue with young women being trafficked around the United States. How can we see this as average citizens, I mean, in our own community? I mean, can I see this going on, for example,
in Boston where I live?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you can, especially the port cities.
How do I spot it?
Well, go to bars, massage parlors.
Okay.
Look at ads in newspapers.
And it's this entire underground enterprise that just is probably permeating all 50 states to a certain extent.
Oh, absolutely.
And the rest of the world.
And extremely well organized. And one thing I learned in Russia that they would do is as soon as the police or we or the organizations were starting to zero in on a gang working a certain area, they just transferred jurisdiction. And once they go from one oblast to another, which is like going from one state to another, mm-hmm. the jurisdiction ends. So then you'd have to call in the equivalent of the you'd call in the federal detectives, which is the equivalent of the FBI. But that's a whole other level of involvement, which we did manage to do. And then that got me expelled from Russia because.
Right. I think it's safe to say that certain elements in the highest levels of government and power are corrupted by this. They might be blackmailed by this. You get people at high levels in our industry, in our culture, in our business, even in our religions that might be blackmailed by this. I mean, a good example of that was the operation run by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, there's no question, there's been documentaries about this. I'm not, you know, saying anything here that's conspiratorial. They were running a prostitution ring all over the country and all over the world. And they were, and it involved high level figures in politics. I'm not going to mention names because I'll get taken down, but people know who I mean. And, you know, they were black. Once you get involved with something like that, you're blackmailed because they can destroy your career. You've been compromised. And it's kind of a two-way street because on the one hand, you get all these, you know, you get your illicit pleasures. On the other hand, you're doing the bidding of the people who are doing the blackmailing in politics and in culture, and you're protecting them. It's kind of like a protection racket. And so it's a very, very difficult thing to pierce. And you've gone in and you've kind of poked a little bit of a stick in the hornet's nest in Russia and you got kicked out, but you're dealing with a bigger international problem, one that has grown and one that continues to metastasize.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, there's inside criminal groups, there's all kinds of different criminal groups. And when you work with government, when you work with our government, you know, people might be completely corrupt in one area and very helpful in other areas. And I think that's generally true. So like we were always in danger from the trafficking mafia, but we were always helped by the car theft mafia who despise the trafficking mafia.
You could play one criminal gang after the other and maybe get some justice.
Well, they would escort our people around and beat up anyone that gave our regional partners trouble. It was a kind of a strange situation to be in. We also had tremendous support from the Azeri grocery mafia, who are fierce. They took over the grocery concessions in Russia mm-hmm. by blood, but they hated human traffickers. So it was an interesting balance. And I've just been stunned to come back here and find it's almost the same. It is the same. In fact, it's a lot of the same people.
And but there's basically these subcultures of organized criminals who control various areas of endeavor and that they compete with each other quite fiercely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that. I mean, that's why the founding fathers of our republic came up with the concept of a balance of power. You pit three different, because they knew that government's corrupt. So they pit three different types of branches of government against each other, each with its own responsibility, and each would check the power of the other branch. And that idea was supposed to permeate down to the states and the communities, and it was supposed to create this sort of imperfect balance with the hope that there'd be a few honest people in the mix who would come up once in a while and blow the whistle and like the people in the media and journalists or you know, citizen investigators, and like what you're doing right now. And, you know, I mean, look, I say this with a sense of optimism because I think they're good wins, when evil is exposed. But what we're talking about right now is something that most people don't know what's going on, and it is extremely evil in the United States and the world.
It is. And we did show after our group went out and canvassed all the villages and found out what a high percentage of children and women were being trafficked out of villages all over the former Soviet Union. We wanted to know where they were going. And we organized, it's a long story, it took about a year, but we organized former Soviet Union, actually it was a worldwide chat room, ran for 11 hours, went through 11 time zones, and people from villages that didn't even have telephones, if they could get to a university internet center, which were just being opened then, they could participate. And eventually we got almost 3,000 people participating from 17 different countries with something like 5 million pieces of data. And shockingly, it showed that most of people who were trafficked said they were going to the United States. Hmm. Now, that was their belief. That's what they signed up for. That's what the advertising was for. We couldn't follow through on that. But I was shocked. Most of them were going to New York. So, or they thought they were. And I took this information immediately to the embassy and the State Department, and they didn't want to hear it. And I took it to the Trafficking in Persons Office, who was later going to fund us, and they didn't want to hear it. I would put information out on a table in front of them. They wouldn't look at it.
You know, I mean, look, there have been scandals, of course, in any society going way back. And I think in modern times, back in the 1980s, you had the Franklin cover-up, which involved mostly boys and Republicans. Where people came forward and they basically kidnapped and then they were used as sex slaves. You had Pizzagate, which is something we can't talk about because I'll get taken down on YouTube. But it's, I only bring these things up because these were pretty big scandals. They were covered up. The people who were trying to expose it were denounced and publicly and destroyed, and their reputations destroyed just for mentioning it. They were not investigated. And it shows that there is this undercurrent that permeates all of our official society. Now, I'm not saying they're all involved in it. I'm not even saying most of them are involved in it. But there's enough people involved in it that it does create kind of an informal infrastructure that interacts and intersects with like infrastructures all over the world. Jeffrey Epstein is another example. And that they're engaging in these kind of despicable activities. When you bring it up, oh, you're part of QAnon and this kind of crap. I mean, right? I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know what that is, but they are mentioning this business of pedophilia, by the way, in very high places. And I'm not sure they're completely wrong. All I would say is, and since I have no idea, is that it should be investigated instead of attacking the people who are doing the investigation. If you don't like these conspiracy theories coming out of QAnon, fine. Have them investigated. Let's find out what they actually are about and if there's any validity to them. I mean, some of them are pretty weird, but the basic theory there is that there is a ring of pedophiles that function all over the world and that are involved in satanic practices. I don't think that that's unlikely.
It's not just one. There's multiple different rings that belong to different families, and these things go back centuries. I wanted the State Department and the embassies to do was to investigate. If I gave them a list of names, could they follow up and see if these people actually went into the United States? Because then you know that these rings are operating in New York. It looked like New York, certainly Boston, and then on the West Coast. Investigate. Just simple as can be. Just check the names.
I interviewed years ago the author of a book, this guy who did a deep dive into the Son of Sam murders, and he found out that the Son of Sam, whom he interviewed in prison and who murdered, I think, 13 young women, was involved in a satanic cult. He said so himself. He gave evidence to this author. and that this satanic cult is still around and they're still doing these murders. You know, these are things that ought to be investigated. It's that simple. These are, you know, it's worse than organized crime. I mean, these are, you know, taking advantage of children and young people. There's nothing more despicable than that. I mean, here in Boston, we had the Happy Face murders. I don't think they're happening now, but they involved mostly young men who would come out of a bar like at 2 o'clock in the morning alone, usually probably drunk. And then they disappeared and they would find the body floating in the Charles River, or they would find it somewhere else. And it wasn't even a, particularly a sexual piece either to it, nor was it robbery. They just were murdered. These are not accidents. You know, these are things that are happening. It takes organization to do this. And it's something that if our law enforcement and our justice departments aren't investigating it, then it says something about them.
Mm-hmm. They won't even look at it. I was absolutely stunned.
Okay, well, Juliette, listen, I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. And let my listeners and viewers know, because I know you're involved in, I think, in an organization that is trying to expose sex trafficking. And let my listeners and viewers know how they can reach you and how they can find out more about it and where they can get your book.
Well, they can go on my website, which would have been good if I put it up here, but I didn't.
I'll put it up on the in the liner.
It's Juliette Engel, all one word, .com. Okay. And you can see the two books, Sparky and Angels Over Moscow, and the material about me, and then a link to Miramed Institute, which is the organization that I founded, which in turn founded the Angel Coalition, which is why we have the name Angels Over Moscow, which was the organization that rescued thousands of trafficking victims, women, children, men in labor. And this was all done like an underground railroad that involved thousands of people all over the world. And it's a good read.
Good. Incredible story. Very important story. The more people can become aware of it, the more we can all become a part of an awakening in this country. And in this
Absolutely. World. Yeah. And everybody can do something. And we can talk about that more on another show.
Yeah,
if
let's
you want.
Stay in touch. You know, let's. I want to stay on this issue. And I want to keep at this. Juliette Engel, I want to thank you very much for joining me. I admire what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right. Have a great afternoon. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.